B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Wednesday, October 2nd, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to find out what the best video game is according to the year that you were born. Plus, we'll get to know Grizzly Mug. He's the director for the Red Bull documentary, Against the Odds. Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. With every new generation of console, inevitably, there is a big push in hardware technology. And, you know, we're right on the cusp of a new generation of consoles. So it's got me thinking, like, what are some of the innovations you'd like to see in the next generation of video game consoles?
Yeah, and, you know, this is a really difficult question because it's so hard to picture where things can go from here. Like, I feel like, think about where gaming started for us, right? Yeah. Like, we were coming out of the NES era,
sure,
into the Super Nintendo era.
And there was a lot of room for growth, right?
You could imagine an awful lot. And now, as we
exactly.
get close to photorealistic graphics, as we get close to VR, you know, really taking off, it's getting significantly more difficult to imagine the innovations that
could
be made.
It's not a hard question for me to answer, but it's also not anything new because we technically have it right now. VR is a thing, but it's at the sort of awkward in between where it's still too expensive to where people aren't widely using
it. It's cost prohibitive.
And as a result, people aren't developing it for it. So for me, that's where it needs to be. We need to get something that's way more consumer friendly so that more people start developing things that are inherently VR. I don't just want last year's releases mm-hmm. in VR that I've already played. I want something that's only VR, that's bespoke to it, because that's going to be way better than anything else that's available right now.
So let me ask you then, because every time we've seen VR kind of come and go over the years, and there's been multiple times
sure.
that we've seen VR. We saw it
yeah.
in the 90s. We saw it another attempt in the 2000s. Every time we see it, people, they're interested for a minute and then go, eh, whatever.
It's not that. Well, mostly because the technology wasn't there
isn't
yet.
There.
Yeah.
Do you believe that the technology, even though it may still be cost prohibitive, that the technology is there now that VR, if they could get the price to a reasonable point and get some development for it, VR would be here to stay?
Yes, I do. And if they were to get it to that point, I think from there the growth would be exponential because now people are investing in it, people are developing for it, and the technology would just continue to take off.
No, I agree. It's the same thing you saw like with smartphones, right? There were people.
Good comparison.
You had people who had smartphones, you know, all the way dating back to like 98, 99 when like Blackberries and Palm.
Yes, Palm Pilot. Yes, of course.
Around. Okay,
but when the phone companies started subsidizing the phones to get you hooked on the plans,
right,
and everybody got smartphones, there was no way you could go back after that.
But actually, I mean, there was a much bigger consumer phenomenon that happened, which was the iPhone. Let's
yeah.
be honest, the adoption of smartphone technology owes itself, yes, the history of it owes to BlackBerry and Palm Pilot, but no one was truly sold from like a base consumer level until they saw, oh, wait a minute, I can watch movies on my phone. Mm-hmm. I can, you know, like there's it now is a portable screen. BlackBerries and Palms didn't have that.
No, they didn't. And I won't disagree with you there on the fact of how innovative that, you know, the iPhone was. But I think the foundation was laid by that. And that's
sure.
why the iPhone was able to be as successful as it was, because the conditions were already met.
Here's the thing. We don't have an iPhone comparison
exactly.
yet in VR.
Unfortunately.
Right? Like, it's still very much early adoption, even though the technology has been being developed and available in some commercial sense for the better part of almost two decades.
Well, the thing with VR, too, though, is that, like, when we talked about killer apps and peripherals and big games, think about how many of them were bundled with the system at a reduced cost. And I think that's incredibly important when we're talking about if VR is ever
yep.
going to catch on, is that there has to be some sort of VR bundle that would only cost maybe $50 more than the base.
That'd be a good
than
start.
The base thing.
But going back to Robbie's point, there's got to be something that just makes the whole platform catch fire. There's got to be some kind of software phenomenon that people have so much, you know, fear of missing out that they run out and buy the hardware.
What
and I'm going to tell you that VR chat is not getting that done.
No, it's not. Well, let me ask you this, though, because we know that, well, we don't know for sure, but it's a very, very good chance that Elder Scrolls 6 is launching on the PlayStation 5, right?
Yeah.
Launches on the PlayStation 5 with VR compatibility.
With a VR compatibility.
Oof. Out the gate. Not a year later.
Right.
Not 2 years
Day
later.
Day one.
Out the gate.
Nope.
No, I don't think that
doesn't get it done. And here's why. It's got to be VR only. Like, it's got to be exclusive.
It's got to be made for VR.
Exactly.
The experience has to be inextricably tied to VR. You can't do it without VR. I think it would be incredibly difficult to do a game that's built to be played in a more traditional way and then make it for VR and make that game satisfying.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're currently talking about what we'd like to see in terms of the next gen. And here's the thing. We've gotten a little bit caught up on technology that is already commercially available, widely available, and what we'd like to see out of it. But I'd like to actually kind of future cast a little bit more, read the tea leaves a little bit more, because there are other technologies out there like Microsoft's HoloLens that are doing some truly innovative things that some of these systems might want to think about looking at.
Yeah, I feel like you might be onto something with the concept of not just VR, but AR as well.
Yes.
We heard earlier this year that there was a possible patent out for the PS5 that would basically make the screen kind of 3D without need of having the glasses. Basically, the PlayStation 5 would be able to do kind of what the 3DS
did. Yeah, so the 3DS.
Yeah. Similar concept, but, you know, bigger and better. I feel like that's actually going a step too short of what you actually want to do. What you actually want to do is be able to kind of project out into the room.
Well,
don't you want to make the living room or wherever
like
you're playing your battleground?
A perfect example is like what we have when you see like Worlds or the International for Dota 2 or something.
Oh, please don't tell me.
The KDA performances.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Holograms, really?
Holograms.
Holograms.
Holochess.
Hologram. Dude, oh, my God. If I could play Teamfight Tactics with the actual pieces out in real life, that would be so sweet.
Well, I see. Now, this is the sort of future casting that I was talking about, because you're right. That would be amazing.
Yeah, and you know what? You don't need an interface. You could literally just put your finger near the piece and make it move or do whatever.
I think that's even better than Star Wars' Holochest. Star Wars got nothing on Teamfight Tactics.
It's true. It's true, though,
I think, though, you know, every time we've had a major generation gap that's been kind of meaningful, it has been something to do with the viewing experience. Think about the PlayStation 2 and its ability to run DVD.
Mm-hmm.
That
sure.
basically moved the platform forward. Again, we saw a Blu-ray on the PS3, which was less successful, but not
so much. Less.
It helped Blu-ray being the standard, though.
It did.
I don't know about that. I mean, yes, it did a little bit, but more than that, it was the streaming apps that you started to see pop up on the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. And that was a huge buying factor, at least for me, when I ended up purchasing one of those systems.
So with that in mind, I think we should look at how will PlayStation 5 and how will Xbox Scarlett, you know, how will those impact the viewing experience? And I think as we're talking about things like AR and having holograms and whatnot, you know, project me into a stadium. Put me in, make my living room the stadium.
Well, I mean, we do have some version of that with, you know, say the Netflix app that runs
in a log cabin.
That runs on PSVR.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, PlayStation has gotten their own VR goggles and it runs fine on that. And yeah, it seats you in like a little log cabin or like a movie theater so that you can look at the screen or you can look around at I don't know what else. But I do
a dark log cabin.
Like, I do think that there is an opportunity there not only to provide an interesting viewing experience, but also to connect people, because all of these devices are inherently connected. And, you know, we saw a really interesting piece of technology out at TwitchCon called Wormhole that might actually be really kind of cool for something like this. But, you know, that kind of technology integration would also be something that I would love to see on future consoles. Things that not only enhance the viewing experience, but bring a viewing experience to a collective viewing experience without having to, like, navigate tons of rights issues and stuff like that. Like, that part should be figured out for the end user.
You know what's a technology that I always wanted was the fact that I own a bunch of discs from older gens. I would love a way to put that disc into that machine and it read it and just give me the digital copy. Because I already bought the game, so now here it is. I've given you the money for this game already. Let me have that digital copy.
Sorry, that's never going to happen as long as they're still, you know, as long as people are willing to go to the PlayStation Store and pay $9.99 for PlayStation 1 games digitally, never going
to
happen.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying it would be a wonderful idea to have. They let me burn CDs, copies of CDs and stuff, but I guess they learned their lesson.
Sony learned their lesson back at the PlayStation 3. When they made that one version of the PlayStation 3 backwards compatible, and then they were like, oh, we can never do this again.
This
just made too much sense.
A higher up there was like, wait, you let them do what? Absolutely not. Scrap that on all future models.
Those PlayStation 3s go for a mint now, don't they?
Yeah, they do. It's hard to find them.
It's very tough to find.
Because that's what I had, an 80 gig FAT.
Yeah, well, to be fair, they went for a mint back then. Weren't they like $600 bucks?
$600.
Yeah.
That was insane.
But I mean, there's so much, you know, cool technology that's being developed, and to have that kind of stuff integrated with video game platforms, as you had pointed out, for Blu-ray and DVD technology, it was absolutely critical in the adoption of both of those platforms. But listen, we want to hear from you. What do you want to see out of the next-gen consoles? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint X. XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we're going to get to know Grizzly Mug. He's the director for the Red Bull documentary Against the Odds that chronicles Team OG's rise to brilliance at TI8. That conversation will wrap up today's Checkpoint XP Daily. But ahead next, what is the best video game for the year that you were born? Stick around, we're going to find out.
For Nate, it's Pong.
Ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
If you had to name the best video game from the year that you were born, do you think you'd be right? Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on Fox Sports WBSM 1340 AM in Florence, Alabama, as well as News Talk WGAC 580 and 95.1 in Augusta, Georgia. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got a ton of emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one but two cat emotes, Tali and Fritz. Our actual cats are now Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. It's at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. What's the best video game for the year that you were born? I was born in 1984.
Oh, God.
I know, right? I feel so old. So I'm real curious what mine is, but we've got a list that's going back all the way to 1971.
Yep. Wow. So I figure we'll go up through, the 70s, maybe through the late 90s here, and we'll give you these, and then we'll stop and talk a little bit about the ones on our birthdays. So 1971, yeah, that is going to go to the Oregon Trail.
Oh, wow.
Which it says,
that
although,
game is that old?
I didn't realize it was quite that old. Well,
I would have thought Pong would have outsold Oregon Trail.
Well, it says, although far from its final version, Minnesotan teachers Don Rowich, Bill Heineman, and Paul Dillenberger created the Oregon Trail for the teletype writer and debuted the game in his 8th grade history class on December 3rd, 1971.
See, that game, there's a reason why that game is in every school ever, because it was made by teachers. Now, it makes perfect sense.
Nate, 1972. Pong.
Oh, okay. So it predates Pong?
Yeah,
really?
Atari released the arcade version of Pong in 1972.
Well, because Pong was a cultural phenomenon. You can't...
Absolutely.
Can't ignore that.
No, 1973 has Space Race. I don't know Space Race very well.
That's because we weren't born.
We were very, very, not born.
Yeah, but I know what Pong and the Oregon Trail are.
Well, okay, fair.
I would have thought Space Invaders, but you know what? That's okay.
In 1974, we've got Maze War, which has the creepiest cover I've ever seen. It's just like a maze with an eyeball in it staring at you. It's
Illuminati
stuff.
Yeah,
right there.
Yo, son, creepy. Never mind.
But this is the, what's interesting about this game is that it's like semi 3D. Like there's a bit of like
Windows maze.
It would later become the basis for graphics for like Doom or Duke Nukem. Yeah, but this was a kind of rudimentary version of that.
1975 has Gunfight, which is the first depiction of human on human violence. So I guess pretty important. So that's 1975.
That's pretty important,
I guess. 1976. Oh, here's one we've all played on our phones. Breakout.
Breaker.
Everyone knows Breakout. You've played some form of it.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. There is an entire generation of kids listening to us right now going, "What do you mean? I get so many other interesting Clash of Kings came on my on my phone." If you had a flip phone as you were growing up,
you could play it on your Kyocera.
That might have been the first game I ever played on a phone before.
Yeah.
Our first RPG showed up in 1977. We've got Zork.
Oh, that's a blast from the past. That's a mud, technically, right?
Yeah. Technically.
Yeah.
1978 is Space Invaders.
That's when we start being able to have color.
Yeah, 1979 is Asteroids. So now we're starting to get into some games that we would know a little bit better.
When they took the color away with Asteroids.
Yeah, they sure did. 1980 is Pac-Man.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
it's only one of the best-selling games ever.
Well, they only made, you know, tons of apparel and a hit song. Pac-Man was a huge cultural phenomenon. I'm not surprised by that.
1981.
Miss Pac-Man.
3 years before Nate was born, we have Donkey Kong making his appearance.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Dig it.
1982 is Pitfall.
Oh, Pitfall.
I forgot about
Classic.
Pitfall. Ooh. Classic.
1983, Don Bluth. Dragon's Lair.
Oh.
Dragon's Lair. An all-time classic.
It is a classic because, like, it used real animation.
It did.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, pixel animation. So, yeah, it really kind of, like, and also, first time ever having QuickTime events.
Yep. And as recently featured on Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
1984. Nate.
What is it?
Tetris.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Actually described as the Soviet mind game.
That makes total sense. You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We've got a list of the best video games according to the year that you were born. We've hit my year, 1984, with Tetris. So now we're on to 1985.
1985 goes to Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, of course it does.
This makes absolute sense. How did that game come out like a year after I was born, and yet that was still the first video game that I had ever played?
Because it's not like video games were coming out in droves like
that's
like
true.
That,
true.
You know?
Well, actually, at one point in the NES era, when the time I would have been interested in video games, they really were.
They were, but you know.
1986, The Legend of Zelda.
Real classics now. Yeah,
Link.
And now we approach the best year ever in the history of mankind. Shake and bake.
Both Norris and Robbie are 1987. They are going to be for Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah!
Come on!
Yep, they have Final Fantasy.
Your year sucks.
Comparatively.
Yeah, Tetris. Tetris
your Tetris.
Settle down, old man.
You know what? I don't want Tetris.
It's too bad. That's what you
get. That's tough. 1988, we've got Super Mario Brothers 3, which was indeed a classic.
We just skip over Super Mario Brothers 2, wherever that was.
Well, because that's
Doki
not
Doki
even...
Doki Panic?
Thank you. It wasn't even Super Mario Brothers 2. It was Doki Doki Panic.
1989, the year of my birth. I've got Wow. Sim City from Maxis.
You guys were born in crappy years.
Yeah, so, I mean, Norris, you being a big City Skylines fan, I'm surprised you'd say that. Nate, 1990 is Super Mario World.
Well, JKP Joe in our chat was born in 1990.
There you
go. Super Mario World, actually the most recent game that I've beaten. Thank you, Switch.
Yeah, there you go. 1991, everyone should be able to guess this one. It is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, that's right. That sounds about right.
Followed by 1992's Mortal Kombat.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait.
Wow, I completely forgot. I said I was talking to my mom, and I literally was like, yeah, 1992, Mortal Kombat came. I'm surprised I remembered that off the top of the dome.
1993, Doom? Is Doom that late?
Wow.
Doom, I thought Doom was way earlier than that.
I just saw a headline that someone at McDonald's got Doom to play on their register screen.
Proving that literally you can run Doom on anything. And yes, can confirm Doom came out in 1993.
Fair enough. 1994, we've got Donkey Kong Country, followed by 1995's Chrono Trigger.
I always forget about how old Donkey Kong Country is.
I can't, because Donkey Kong Country graphically holds up like a lot better than Doom does now.
It was so ahead of its time.
It really was.
I'm going to run us through the end of the 90s.
Real
here.
Quick.
96, Pokemon Red and Blue. 1997, Final Fantasy VII. 1998, Ocarina of Time. And 1999. Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that sounds about right. What about 2000? Just give me 2000.
Year 2000 is The Sims.
The Sims.
That's when casual gaming really started to pop off.
It did. But listen, we want to hear from you. Did you hear your favorite game for the year that you were born? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP, we're going to get to know Grizzly Mug. He's the director of the Red Bull documentary Against the Odds that chronicles Team OG's rise to glory in Dota 2. Stick around. That's ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the Hawk 1340 in Wenatchee, Washington, as well as the Fan 97.1 in Columbus, Ohio. Check out our website over at CheckpointXP.com, and while you're there, make sure you sign up for the Checkpoint XP Nation newsletter. Get behind-the-scenes insight, photos, and access to contests and unique content. All it takes is an email address and zip code, so sign up today at CheckpointXP.com. Joining us now is Grizzly Mug. He's the director of a documentary called Against the Odds. Grizzly, man, thank you for giving us a moment of your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
So, listen, before we get into this, I really have to compliment you on the amazing work that you did. I was watching this as I was, you know, kind of getting ready in the morning. And, NPR calls them driveway moments. I got stuck at the end of my bed watching this thing, and I was glued there. I could not leave.
I was late for work because of it.
It was really genuinely amazing, and I highly recommend it. Everyone should go check it out. But tell us about the documentary. What is the story that is being told here?
So the story is about this team that goes to the International, which is Dota 2's biggest tournament of the year, sort of the Super Bowl of Dota 2. And the most unlikeliest of stories, right? This team that just formed months before that goes on to compete in the International, and spoiler alert, they win the whole thing. And the fact that they did that, the way they did that, That's the sort of quick pitch, right? But the story in this documentary is actually goes much deeper than that, right? We start almost 8 years before the international, starting with these two best friends. Their names, their gamer handles being Fly and No Tail. Mm-hmm. These guys have played together since the Han days, and they grind through Dota 2 together, and at some point decide to form what we know now as OG.
Team OG was formed by myself and No Tail. Big idea behind OG is a mindset of friendship, but also want to win.
It's a mix of hunger, talent, atmosphere, team dynamic. This is what matters. We just want to do things right, like do things our way.
And the documentary covers essentially the history of OG and their friendship. And so if you're not familiar with esports, if you're not familiar with the international, that's okay, because really what this story about is friendship and how that can be tried by going through an experience, which is competing at the highest level.
Well, and it's worth noting, you say, you know, even if you're not into esports, I am into esports, but I'm not a huge Dota 2 fan.
Yeah, no, you're a League of Legends fan.
I've always been a League of Legends fan. So, you know, at first I'm hearing about this, oh, it's a story about OG at the International. That's cool, you know, huge prize pool and all that stuff. I'll check it out. But much like you, Nate, I was glued to it as soon as I sat down and started watching, because it really is more of, like, you could be a fan of a hockey movie without being a fan of hockey if the story is good.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what happened to me. I got very invested in this team that basically wanted to do things their own way and kind of faced ridiculous amounts of adversity to
get
there.
It's a great underdog story.
It absolutely is. And so I got to ask you, Grizzly, what was it like getting to work with OG throughout this project? Because talk about a team that's kind of gone through the highs and lows of it. I got to imagine there were some really tough parts of filming this documentary.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've been telling stories in esports, working with pros across many esports. And a lot of the times I'm going in to tell their stories where they've either achieved a level of success that they've gotten used to, and that would be someone like Daigo Umehara. I went to Tokyo and told his story.
Sure.
Or someone who maybe hasn't attained a level of success yet, but you can tell, right, that their story deserves to be told because it's only a matter of time. With OG, what was really, really interesting is when I went to meet and film the on-camera interviews for this documentary, it was about a month after they had just won one of the biggest tournaments in esports and the largest prize pool. So we're talking newly minted millionaires.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't think the money really meant that much to them. I think the fact that they had just won this thing that they, some of them had been dreaming of for years, it was sort of, they were still kind of, you could tell they were still processing.
Well, and that's one of the storylines that ends up playing out. You know, they win four majors in a row and then they lose at that international. And despite all of the different heights that the team is able to get to, they've done something, you know, no other team has done at that point. They still can't climb the mountain of the international. And to watch, you know, them get so close and then, you know, kind of the unraveling of the team right before their epic final run at TI8. I mean, you can't write this kind of drama.
No, you can't. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is going into the story, I knew sort of the bullet points. I knew sort of, you know, okay, these two best friends who've been together forever, you know, they go their separate ways. Now this forces No Tail, who's still with OG, to form a new team, to try to make a run at TI8 with, you know, months to go. I knew all the bullet points. What I didn't get until I started the interviews and dug deeper into the story is really how important some of these other players, you know, like Sebastian, Seb, or Jerax, right?
Sure.
When you start weaving through those narratives, you realize that a story you thought already, you know, you couldn't write this stuff gets even better.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're sitting down with Grizzly Mug. He's the director of the Red Bull Gaming documentary Against the Odds. And, you know, one of the things that you had talked about, Grizzly, a moment ago was, you know, some of the ancillary stories that kind of, you know, act as satellites around the core story. And I want to talk about Anna for just a moment, because he had a really fascinating arc, and it gave me pause as someone who comments on esports, because I don't think we sometimes realize, like, these are young kids whose performance were breaking down in sometimes very, very harsh ways, and I found his struggle and then, you know, ability to rise above being challenged by the haters and the criticism so interesting.
If I had to go through what he had gone through at the age of 17, I think I would have crumbled way before he did.
Everyone's talented in the game, but not everybody has a good mindset. You have to be strong. If you want to be the absolute best, you have to be mentally stronger than everyone else. It's so easy for people to just crumble when they start losing.
It's just one tournament, but you screw it up once and it's like it's gone. It's a lot of pressure, and I didn't really enjoy that pressure.
After TI7, Anna, he wasn't ready to keep going.
Right, yeah. Kind of the difference with the work that I get to do in esports and maybe some of the great content that's being produced by teams is that a lot of times I get to travel to these players' homes, right, and meet their families. You get really aware of not just the challenges of being a competitor, right? Being a competitor in anything is going to be difficult if you want to be the best.
Yeah.
But on top of that, these are guys who are dealing with issues that maybe traditional sports aren't dealing with, and that's maybe their families and communities not understanding or supporting what they're doing, right? So there's all these other challenges, but absolutely the biggest challenge would be that these guys live online, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the access is 24/7. They're going to be exposed to it one way or another. And yeah, it's really easy to forget that part of it. And I felt that really strongly that we needed to tell that story. You know, I think they all went through it, but Anna specifically just took it a lot harder than maybe the other guys.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like you said, it gives you pause.
Yeah. Well, but to see the other side of it and to see him overcome it and to rise above it, I thought was really inspiring. I think that that's something that, you know, kids, no matter if they're involved in esports or not, I think that that's a message that they can really, you know, that really resonates.
Sure. And I mean, it's worth noting too that the story, as we now know, continues, because one of the closing slates of the documentary is that OG fields the same roster at TI9, and we now know they win that one
back
as
to back
well.
Victories. Yeah.
I mean, as a question to you, do you feel like that's just a testament to how good that team is and how well they communicate with each other?
100%. We did, you know, as is the case in a lot of feature length documentaries, you always do follow up interviews closer to when you're finishing, kind of filling holes. So I'd seen the guys actually, ironically, at Birmingham. They were talking like a team that was super comfortable with each other. We're already, you know, thinking about what they were going to be doing at TI9. And yeah, you could tell these guys, having been through what they went through together, that was going to be a difference maker. You know, regardless of whether they won or not, this wasn't a team that was going to go quietly.
Because again, just this team that, you know, for TI8 at least, kind of skimped by and barely qualified, and then lose a couple members of their team right before the event. They have to convert a coach into a player at that point, bring on a new coach, and then bring on someone else who
go up against former friends
bring on someone with very little competitive experience.
Yeah.
But every domino in that should say absolutely not.
Yeah.
And for it all to come together, you couldn't write a better story. The truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
Absolutely. Grizzly Mug, director of the Red Bull Gaming documentary Against the Odds, has been our guest. Make sure you check it out. It's available on YouTube as well as through Red Bull Gaming as well. Watch it. It is so fantastic. I cannot speak highly enough of this. It is just a fantastic story. Grizzly, man, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Grizzly Mug for his time. For full interviews, make sure you visit our website over at CheckpointXP.com. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, CheckpointXP.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern live at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at WeirdAtLast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Brand management by Chad Callahan. And of course, my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Ray Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.